Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited. Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, which has been waiting for the triumphant return of the Doom Patrol, and it's happened.
Yeah, I'm Paul. You can find me on reading underscore Hicks on Twitter. You can send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. I'm sorry, I'm very excited. It's very hard to talk. And we have a supporting website, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, Facebook, episodes on iTunes, Stitcher Radio and podbean.com. And how exciting is this, Mike?
I'm so excited. If I giggle a lot this episode, tough shit. I'm just... It's a great day to be a Doom Patrol fan. Anyway, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And we are always brought to you by the wonderful Comicosity website, a fantastic website for news, reviews, previews, and excellent articles all about comics and the comic love.
Yeah, now if you're not familiar with Comicosity, one thing they do every week is a Hot 5 for the week. So if I go to this week's Hot 5, I can see there's All-Star Batman number 2 and then a little comic called Doom Patrol number 1. And it says why it's hot.
Ooh.
It says, a lot of comic fans have been waiting for this moment for years. Oh, I didn't know that. As of tomorrow, Doom Patrol is back, and as weird as ever, the new series looks to set the tone for the entire new Young Animal line. Talented creators with a unique style launching an entire new line of comics on the back of a classic property whose fans have been clamoring for its return makes Doom Patrol the must-read comic of the week. If you want to learn more about these characters before reading the series, check out Waiting for Doom. Waiting for Doom is the best Doom Patrol podcast on the internet and can be found on this very site. The only question is whether Mike and Paul are going to change the name of the podcast now that the wait is over.
Nah, we'll stay on brand. It's cool.
Yeah, the name has got a lot of cachet for us now. I mean, it's, you know, we've been waiting for Doom for 21 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 71 episodes, I think.
Yep.
So we changed it now. We don't want to reboot. We're not the new 52. We're not rebirth.
We're not rebirthing. We're not Marvel nowing it up. Or Marvel now nowing it up.
Yeah. All new Marvel nowing.
None of that rot. Nah. We're going to remain waiting for Doom. I think, you know, it's catchy. It's sexy. You know, people love it. They love us.
Yeah.
But big thanks to a friend of the show, Pooch, John Ernan Pooch, for that shout out there.
Yeah. Love that guy.
Stuff. Top bloke. Anyway, Paul. Before we get into the serious business, how's your week in comics and life and such been?
All it's been is just anticipation for the new issue that arrived today. And we're recording about 2.5 hours ago, the issue became online.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very, very long and frustrating download of the issue.
Oh, no.
But I finally read it, and that's the only thing I can think about right now. Mm-hmm. So Doom Patrol number 1, we salute you.
I must admit, since our last episode, I have not read a single comic. And I think for the very same reason, the anticipation of this specific issue to drop, as the kids say, has just been at the forefront of my mind.
Yeah, no, it's time to celebrate. I mean, you don't want to go, you know, nibbling through the pantry, you know, when you know you've got this feast coming. You don't want to, you know.
Well put, sir. Well put.
Yeah, and it's time. So, I mean, I felt like taking the missus out to the Westfield shopping mall today and just saying, pick at the food hall, whatever you like. It's on me. I thought it was that sort of occasion.
Wow. Oh. Everyone wins.
Yeah, I treat my lady like a queen, don't I?
Oh, don't you just. Nothing better than Westfield Food Court.
Pick of the food court, Mike.
Sorry, pick of the food court, yes. Oh.
Right.
What a lucky lady. Oh. And sorry all the ladies out there listening, Paul's taken. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, how about we have a look at what's going down on Darrington Way then?
Okay. I've got nothing. Got anything?
No, I haven't seen much online chatter from Mr. Zway or Darrington. I think they're probably more than likely hitting the boat. I know they're doing I know Jared Way is doing a signing at a comic store over there, the name of which completely escapes me at this moment. So they're probably, you know what? They're probably resting on their laurels.
I think it's called Far Away Comics from my point of view.
Okay.
Yeah, one of them. One thing I would mention is our friend Doug Zavisha has done a little post on his My Greatest Adventure 80.blogspot.com, which is sort of a roundup of all the places you can see interviews with Jared Way and Nick,
mm-hmm.
and I think even John Rivera's in there too, all the talking about Young Animal and Doom Patrol in particular. So he's done a little post which tells you all the places to go to see those, hear them and read them. So good on you, Doug.
Good love work, you, Dougie.
Dougie. Yes. Oh, Dougster. The Dugginator.
Mr. Zavisha.
The big Z.
Yep. DZ.
Sorry, we're a bit drunk with Doom Patrol love tonight. So.
Yeah. Anyway, is that ticking we hear?
I don't know. Is it ticking?
It's still ticking. It's ticking over. It's
ticking.
It's what? Still ticking. It's still kicking along.
Wow.
Yes, the Doom Clock is still here. Okay, so we take a loving look over at the Doom Clock and we can see that it's still ticking along. It's still working for us. It hasn't. Wilfred did put a survey up on Twitter asking people what they thought might happen. Apparently people thought the Doom Clock was going to gain sentience and run away.
Oh.
But I'm glad that didn't happen because, you know, Wilfred's enough of a monster to deal with when it comes to sentient things that shouldn't be sentient. Anyway, the last book we had for the Doom Patrol came out today, issue 1 of volume 6 from Jared Way and Nick Darrington. So it has been 0 days since the last Doom Patrol book.
Hang on. What?
Yep. Before that, we've had to wait about 5 years and 19 weeks since volume 5 wrapped up. Back in 2011. But yes, Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue 1 came out today. In case you didn't know. In case you've only just tuned in now, halfway through the episode. Don't know why you would.
Awesome.
Slightly controversial though, I'm going to say that the last appearance of the team was still 1 year and 5 weeks ago. In All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12, because we haven't seen them as a team together yet. It's only the first issue. So I think by the end of this first arc, they'll be united victoriously as a team.
Right.
Yeah.
We might have to redefine what our concept of the team is.
I'm thinking when they're... Well, when they're... There'll be a point. We'll know when they've got Casey, and because we know Robot Man's in it, we know Larry is going to be there. We know the Chief's going to be when there's a moment when they're all together. That's when I will say that they've appeared as a team, as the Doom Patrol. Because at the moment, there's a few pieces of the puzzle there in the first issue, but we're not there yet. Controversial, I know, but hey, I'm calling it.
Oh.
That big phone down, those big numbers. But this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for the princely sum of 75 US cents on September 15th, 1987, and cover dated December 87, was Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issue 3, from Paul Kupperberg and Steve Lytle. This issue was titled The Fire of the Gods and saw a captured Doom Patrol fighting back against the maniacal Kalki as he made use of Negative Woman's energy self to power his potentially world-destroying device in space. Yeah. These bad guys that want to destroy the world, really? Have they really thought it through? You know? It's like, yeah. We previously discussed this issue way back in episode 26, so you can check that out for more. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
It's time for Doomsplaining, the part of the show where we explain things to do with the Doom Patrol. And today, we're imagining there's a lot of people tuning in to hear what we think about Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue 1. Now, if you're new to the Doom Patrol, you don't know anything about the Doom Patrol except what you've read in this issue, we might point you to episode 62, which was sort of Doom Patrol 101 for beginners. It's a very useful episode for people who don't know much about the Doom Patrol. But we're here. We're going to do it. Hold my hand. Let's dive in to Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue Number 1. Yay! Michael, take us away.
My pleasure, Paul. Oh, God, I'm so excited. Here we go.
Breathe.
Me. We open the issue with a conversation. Why are you so sad? I don't know. I guess I thought it was going to last forever. Does anything really? Yeah, some things do. And during this conversation, we're shown a victorious race car driver. An ambulance crashed in a desert floor with a body laying nearby. A bomb emblazoned with the word grandma being dropped from a cargo hold. And a kiss being placed on a copper-coloured dome. But suddenly we cut back into reality with a pair of EMTs roaring along in their ambulance, delivering an old man to an emergency ward. With teamwork comprised of excellent driving skills and the other EMT just being really good at his job, the man is delivered safely into the hospital's care. The EMTs take a break from their work, with the woman enjoying a turn at the Galactic Matador arcade game, and the man enjoying a... Now, it's Euro? Are we sure it's Euro?
We're not sure of anything to do with this.
We're not sure. Well, let's call it a Euro. It's possibly wrong. I don't care. I'm too happy to worry.
It's spelt gyro. Looks like a kebab to me. It's pronounced Euro, apparently.
And I have recently located a takeaway place not far from my work, and they spell it Y-I-R-O. So I'm thinking it's Euro.
Ah, you went down to the Euro district and had a look around, did you?
Yep.
Yep.
I went on Eurogavi.
It's not a Chico roll, that's for sure.
No, it's not. We learn that the woman is Casey Brink, and the man is named Sam, and they're both a little bit odd. Casey wants only to do good, feeling at home in the ambulance, and determined to be a bright light in a black hole, just like her mother told her before she flew into the sun. What?
What?
Sam has a son, Lucius, who's a little weird like Casey, apparently, and Lucius's mother isn't around as she joined a cult some years ago. Sam also thinks that everyone and everything has a hidden universe inside, even the Euro he's enjoying. And as Casey comments that maybe we're all inside of someone else's Euro, we take a closer look within Sam's snack and suddenly see a force of cloaked figures approaching a city in a desert. A fight breaks out between opposing forces as a robotic-looking man smashes his way into a missile silo. As images of a subway carriage break through this reality, a voice cries out, "Cliff, where are you? It's so dark. I can't see anything. I don't feel anything." The robotic man comments, "Bunch of crap. I'll send you all to hell." And he smashes his fist down on a launch button. Back in the real world, the rubbish bin that Sam just threw his Euro into explodes with a loud boom, and something is launched far into the distance through the air. No time to ponder this strangeness, though, as dispatch radios in with a hit-and-run report. But before we follow Casey and Sam any further, we have two short interludes. The first takes us to an abandoned building where a disheveled-looking man, wearing remnants of his Oolong Island hotel and resort uniform, is examining a pile of bricks, asking for Danny to give him a sign so they can go back. And meanwhile, Noel's caller is testing out his musical equipment in a forest and is pleased when he's able to achieve a musical note similar to the sound of a fly. Just like the speech shown in the Euro world we just visited. What type of flies?
I don't know. Is that a rhetorical question or a...
It's a question.
Flies enter, represent, you know, decay and corruption and things like that. So they are contamination.
Well, portents of evil to come, maybe.
Maybe.
Meanwhile, Casey and Sam have arrived at the accident scene they've been directed to, but find nothing at first until they discover a cloaked figure coming down an alley. The cloak falls away from this person, and we see it's Cliff Steele, Robot Man. And as he steps towards them, he is smashed to bits by a garbage truck. Take a drink. Take a very big drink.
Yeah.
Naturally, Casey tells Sam to help her collect all the parts of this robot man. Elsewhere, over at the Rondo Inn, what initially appears to be a regular business meeting turns very strange, as representatives from the Moof Goobers chain on Gloam are informed by the Goob Foobers board that they have discovered a sentient organic generator sprawl, capable of creating and sustaining life. So, of course, they plan to locate, infiltrate, invade, and capture this sprawl and turn it into a stress-free meat product they're calling Danny Burgers.
Uh-oh.
Of course. We return to see what Casey's doing, and she's returned home with a box full of robot parts, much to the annoyance of her roommate. And while Casey has a moment with her cat named Lotion, the roommate answers a knock at the door to discover the tap-dancing, singing telegram, Terry Nunn, who's wishing Casey a happy birthday. And as the song reaches its crescendo, Terry releases balloons and streamers and somehow blasts the roommate into oblivion. Casey says it's not actually her birthday, and Terry remarks that she's never had that sort of thing happen before. But soon enough, they're becoming very fast friends, discussing Terry moving in to the abruptly vacant second room and opening up the robotic head to discover a human brain within. Yay, friendship! The final scene takes us to a tower surrounded by clouds and to a throne room within. The room is lined by statues of robed figures with domino masks on their faces and brandishing golden weapons. And near the throne lays a dead lion, a red cape dragged behind it, and the beast has been struck down by brightly glowing arrows. And further from the lion on the throne, leaving behind a trail of blue blood, lays another figure, humanoid, with a dead glaze looking towards a brick, which reads, "I'm sorry." And that's the first issue of Volume 6 of the Doom Patrol. Paul, your thoughts, your feels, your reactions to this issue.
Mike, this feels like the Doom Patrol. It feels so much like the Doom Patrol. It's reminiscent of earlier volumes, but it's not slavishly copying at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get two new characters straight away with Sam and Casey, and they're immediately made likable. Like, Casey's optimism and her positiveness and her desire to say, never have to say we tried everything we could to her, you know, on the way to the hospital. You know, she's just a great character, and she's so upbeat and positive, you know, and they're a great team, like the way they work together. And when they clasp their hands together, the words teamwork appear.
Yes.
Yeah. And, like, it's a very diverse comic. What sort of ethnicity do you think Sam is?
I'm thinking my first reaction was African-American.
Yeah,
if not just that, maybe African American and Latino heritage as well. But those are my first thoughts. Yeah,
yeah, very dark skin, you know, long hair, facial hair, and everything. Casey's a redhead with freckles, and she always seems to be pretty upbeat and happy. And she's had some weirdness in her life, like she talks about. Sam's talking about a story she told about a high school prom where she was attacked by Fanta hawks and her date turned into a pool of lavender membrane.
Yep.
You know, so these people don't exist in the same reality that we exist in, because he just thinks that's a weird story, but I get the impression from her that it's real.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And Sam's wife joined a cult about 4 years ago, and, you know, that makes him gets him to musing on the not knowing what's inside people. And he said, and then like this Euro, and then we see like a space world in there. And the implication is that, you know, there's a tiny, tiny, tiny world in there that where Cliff is. But it's interesting because when I first saw these pages, they were in the black and white preview, so they weren't any color, but yes. It's colored in such a way that, there's definitely the inner world of the Euro, but it's intercut with these blue panels of a train. Now, what's your theory on the train, Mike?
I've got so many theories on this issue. My immediate reaction to seeing the train carriage is that it's a subway carriage and it is part of Jane's underground.
Yes. And so this is
she's calling Kate out Chalice. Cliff for help. Yes.
Kate Chalice, Crazy Jane from the Morrison Run.
Yes.
Yeah. So the train tracks and the underground was all representation of her inner personalities and the way they connect. And she had a personality that ordered everything called Driver 8.
Mm.
So, hearing this voice saying, "Where are you, Cliff? It's dark. I can't see anything. I don't feel anything," you know, implies that we're inside Jane's head and she's sort of trapped and not able to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps.
Well, looking at the very first page with the panel, the fourth panel of someone kissing the copper-coloured dome.
Yeah.
Again, I'm thinking that's Jane and Robot Man.
Yeah.
I kind of automatically thought, well, it could have been anyone, but with the curly dark hair. And the feminine features of the profile and the lips, that to me was Jane, and the copper colored dome couldn't be anyone else but Robot Man, as far as I'm concerned. And the conversation in that opening page, that makes me think back also to the end of the Morrison run, and a little bit into the Pollack run as well, which I won't spoil too much of, but basically they had a relationship and it didn't quite work out in the end. So I think that's harking back to that as well. So
yeah. And we get a shot of the race car driver, which surely is Cliff Steele winning a race.
Mm. Yes, with a fancy mustache.
Yeah.
Sitting with a fancy mustache.
Yeah, he looks quite old there. He looks a bit Commissioner Gordon-ish.
A little bit. That's true. Yeah.
Mm.
But what else did you enjoy about it?
Well, I love Terry Nunn. I just love the way she's introduced. She is the standout character of the issue to me.
Mm-hmm.
And probably my favourite character in the run so far,
yep.
In the whole one issue of the run so far. And the fact that she does this whole, you know, song and dance routine at the drop of a hat and explodes Casey's flatmate, who was a bit of a dick, really.
Yes, he was, yes.
Like he's annoyed by Casey's upbeat personality, whereas, you know, I'm instantly entranced by her upbeat personality and think she's just adorable. You know, and she's sitting around in an apartment. She's wearing Cliff Steele's jacket. Yeah. Well, and then he criticises the name of her cat, which is Lotion the Cat.
Yeah.
And she gets it, but he's so silky and smooth. He calls it a dishcloth that spits. And so when he gets blown up, you're thinking, well, yeah, he kind of deserved it. He, you know.
What I love about that is that, yeah, this weird stuff happens. This bizarre tap dancing, singing telegram turns up. Blows up the roommate, and then Terry and Casey just carry on as if nothing bad happened.
Yeah, they need a new flatmate now.
Yeah, and that to me reminded me of stuff that happened in Morrison's run where terrible things would happen, but the characters would just go, oh well, and just carry on with whatever it was they were doing.
Yeah, it's a bit Brotherhood of Dada where, you know, turning a policeman into a toilet and things like that. Yeah. You know, if you follow that through properly, that's a horrifying thing.
Exactly, but he's just completely disregarded. It's like, well, he's gone now. Okay, can I move in?
And he exploded like a piñata, like balloons and streamers, and this sort of stuff that looks like pink cake everywhere.
Mm. Yep. Now, I know we've discussed who this mystery character is with the domino mask and who has been revealed to be Terry Nunn. I'm still wondering if she is a persona of Jane's.
Right. She could well be.
She could well be, because if she's a new persona and she has whatever powers it is that, well, however it is she made balloons and streamers and appear and whatever caused the flatmate to explode, I'm wondering if she's still getting used to this new persona's new powers. Because she says, well, that's never happened before, and then goes on her merry way, you know, quite cheerfully, you know, bounding into Casey's life, essentially. And there's still a part of me that thinks that this is, she's somehow related to Jane.
Yeah, she could well be.
She could well be. I wouldn't bet money on it just yet, but
she could be related to Number None. Where, you know, we're, they're the two possibilities that we've got before us so far, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, getting back to the gyro world or the Euro world. Yes, we see that. Yeah, Cliff Steele's fighting a bunch of robots. There's a room full of bombs. He fights his way through to control room. Says, "I'll send you all the help." Presses launch, and then we see in the real world the bin explodes. And before Cliff has even landed, the dispatch radio person says, "It's a lovely night for stargazing, but we've got a pedestrian involved in a hit and run." So she, whoever this dispatch person is, sends them out before Cliff has even landed and had his hit and run accident. Which is very interesting. And then later they say, who is this? And it's not the usual operator. And she says, "I'm your new voice from beyond. You may call me M, E-M.
Yes.
Now, do you have any theories about who that is?
I can't think of anything or any or who M might be. But yeah, it's very bizarre.
Well, I think of Doom Patrol characters I know who start with M. And there's two that spring immediately to mind on the hero side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Mento. But I get the impression that it's a female voice.
Okay.
Or Marion.
Marion.
From the Pollack run.
Oh, my God. Marion the Bandage Woman.
Yeah.
Wow, that'll be a turn up. Oh, I like the way you're thinking, sir.
Yeah, well, just theories for now, but...
I'm hoping it's Marion more than Mento. Because...
It'd be a weird way to get Mento back, you know.
And Marion would make sense because the voice has a fairly cheery demeanor to it.
Yeah.
As it's talk. Yep, okay. Okay, I like the way... And bandages, hospitals, you know.
Yeah. So if you're all unfamiliar with the Pollack run, it's on Comicology. Comicsology?
Comicsology, yeah.
Comicsology.
That's the one.
I almost said Comicsosity, and then that would be wrong.
It would be. But we love those guys too, yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
So that's my theory on that one. Mm-hmm. And you can see as Cliff is coming out of the alley, he's wearing the cloak that was in the sort of Euro world.
Mm-hmm.
And the cloak's falling away from him. And then he comes out and he says, "My head," and which is one of the few words he says in this before he gets splattered by the truck. And the truck has all these... soft toys falling out of the back.
All these soft toy animals. What the heck's up with that?
I don't know.
God. So many. That's the thing. We could be. It could either be. It could be a thread to something else, or it could just be some weird random thing that Darrington Away have thrown in.
Yeah, maybe. Could just.
Obsessing over it.
Could just make the picture more fun to draw for Nick.
Mm.
All right, now, should we talk about the interlude with the man in the old abandoned building looking through the pile of bricks?
Ricardo is his name tag says.
Yeah, and where's that name tag from?
Oolong Island! Yes!
Oolong Island. So this is a reference to Oolong Island, which was the sort of mad scientist, basically in the 52 series, which was a weekly series done for 52 weeks. By four different comic writers, there was an island called Oolong Island. So Grant Morrison was the one pushing this plot. And all the mad scientists in the DC universe were all gathered together there to create mad science together
mm-hmm.
at the behest of a nefarious Egg Foo, I think it was.
Yep.
Yep. Anyway, so that's where we first heard of Oolong Island. And then later in Doom Patrol Volume 5, the volume before this volume, it became the Doom Patrol's base.
Yes.
So Ricardo may have some connection to the former base of the Doom Patrol. And in that series, well, for those of you who have heard of Danny the Street, he is a sentient street able to travel the world, became the Doom Patrol's base for a while,
mm-hmm.
Has worked with the Doom Patrol as their transport.
Yep.
I think in one issue of the Volume 5 run, he was attacked and almost destroyed and reduced to the just being a brick.
Yes.
And he became true. Danny the Brick, and he was able to regenerate from that. So if seeing someone flip through a pile of bricks and looking and shouting out for Danny, makes me think of Danny the Street in the form of Danny the Brick, so in his recovery. And also, Danny always had an affinity for homeless people. So homeless people got to, you know, sort of live on Danny the Street, and that's how Flex Mentallo was found. So Flex
Exactly, Mentallo. I was half wondering if this Ricardo is going to somehow turn into Flex, because we've seen him in the promo artwork as well. So whether we have a slight repeating of disheveled homeless man becoming Flex Mantello, with Ricardo being the genesis for it this time around.
Well, Flex went into sort of lost who he was after he failed against the Pentagon threat, and that's when he became just like a hobo living on Danny the Street. So this guy looks like a hobo, doesn't he?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he's wearing flip-flops and a little sun visor type of hat, and he's very beardy.
Just a bit. Yeah. He's also got a green coat, and then his hat is green, which made me think of My Greenest Adventure.
Oh, good call, Mike, yes.
Which is where Flex kind of originated from, when, you know, a child with powers that his drawings with a green crayon manifested and came to life.
Yeah. So Flex Mentallo is a fictional character in, well, they're all fictional characters, but in the comic he's a fictional character who comes to life due to the power of his creator's his supernatural powers, or meta-human powers, as it were.
Yeah.
So, you know, so seeing this guy, there's something about him. Could, you know, one to watch if we're looking for Flex Mentallo to appear, I reckon.
I tried to think back and didn't have enough time to look it up properly, but I'm wondering if we've met Ricardo in Volume 5, but I don't think we have. I think I was thinking of Rocky from the Challengers, who was also on Oolong Island during that run as a priest.
Yeah, I don't remember a Ricardo from there.
No. Probably fixated on the letter R there, but anyway.
Yes. And this board meeting where it starts off with the woman who works for the Rondo Hotel serving coffee and bagels, and then as soon as she leaves the room, everyone turns weird looking. So half, you know, a bunch of individuals suddenly becomes like sort of red glowing android like people, and two guys turn into sort of blobby people.
Yeah.
And we know they're bad because they swear. You know, the shorthand? You have a character who swears, so you know they're bad. Like Clarence Beaks in Trading Places and things like that. You know what I mean?
Wow, that's a deep cut. But yep.
Well, he was always telling people to fuck off and things like that. Yeah, and that's what these two do. They swear all the time, and they're dripping, pussy, waxy type guys. And the android people, are very corporate.
Yep.
Yeah, so you've got, they're aliens and they're gathering on Earth so they can't be monitored. Yeah, and this Danny Burger thing. So, and there on the slide that they show on their presentation has like a brick at the bottom of this alien writing between a burger.
And I like how it's sort of got an island hut with coconut trees, which again to me calls back to Oolong Island as well.
Well, Danny the Island was in Oolong for a while.
Yes.
Yeah. So, So yeah, look out, Danny the Street. People are gunning for you. And now, people are also searching for you.
I have a theory about the title of the hotel there in the Rondo Inn.
Oh, okay.
And it's a bit of a weird one, but it's quite suitable for this show. My guess is that Rondo is a meta reference based on Gerard Way's musical influences, because in music, a rondo form is where there's a principal theme or a refrain that alternates with contrasting themes, and there's recurring elements that slightly change in some way to provide some variation. So I'm thinking that in this first story, which is called Brick by Brick, this is Way's version on a theme we've seen before in the Doom Patrol, being Danny being sought out by villains of the piece. Because we've seen that before from Morrison and from Giffen in their respective runs. The difference to me, though, this time is that Danny's going to have an even larger part in the story than he has in the past. And the notion of using Danny as a food source is something new as well, and a little bit terrifying. I think Jared Way just really likes Danny the Street and wants to put him front and center But kind of, yeah, sort of reuse that story of this wonderful sentient street or locale, because, yeah, he's been Danny the Island and Danny the World as well, is being sought out by people who are not nice, shall we say.
Yeah.
So that just, I just recalled the word Rondo from High School Musical Studies, of all things.
So, you studied like, High School Musical?
Yeah, sure. It was a great film. No, I studied music in high school. And I recalled that word and I was like, why do I know that? And then, yep, that's why. So it's kind of, I think, yeah, that's kind of his meta commentary on his, the plot of this first arc, I think. Sort of using themes we've seen before. And it probably, you know, also covers the fact that, you know, as Jared said himself, he's going to take everything from the Doom Patrol's past, put it in a blender and fuck shit up.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
So, yeah. Oh, sorry. Just very excited.
Yeah. And I think also reusing the themes, I mean, there's the theme of there's something beloved, let's exploit it.
Mm, yes.
Yeah, which, you know, that's what happens in comics all the time. You know, how to make something popular again and repackage it so you can resell it.
Mm-hmm.
And make it, you know, more popular than it ever has been before, or bring it to more people than ever before. You know, so it's a little bit meta, isn't it?
Just a bit.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is the first issue of a new run. It's a bit too early to pin down all the themes.
Mm. Yeah, but I just got very excited and I just wanted to research.
Yeah. But, I mean, let's talk about this cat that's in the apartment.
Yeah, see, we've seen a werecat type person in the promo art before.
Yeah.
Right? We've also seen a teenage-looking character with a skateboard.
Yeah, the black guy. Yeah.
The black guy. And I'm wondering if that's Lucius, Sam's son.
Oh.
Because Sam says to Casey, you know, oh, he's into heavy metal music and he likes his skateboarding. And I thought, oh, hang on a minute. We've seen a kid with a skateboard in the promo art before.
Hmm. So there's
I don't know. But, we've also seen this cat person wearing a hoodie and kind of wearing similar clothing. So I'm wondering, something's going to happen to Lucian the cat to fuse him and Lucius together?
Right. Well, that'd be interesting.
Mm.
Well, given the way this comic's going, anything goes, I think.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And, well, it's good to see Cliff is still alive, because there is a faint voice coming from the head saying, nutrients. Yeah, and Terry Nunn hears that, and, you know, and she says, we better get this brain some nutrients.
I love when she pops the casing off his head and reveals his brain. She goes, it's a boy! Yeah. I'm like, how does she know that?
Yeah.
I also have to comment on the interlude with Niles Calder.
Yeah.
Okay. Sitting in the forest with his musical gear. Just, and when he hits that note that comes out with the fly symbol, I guess, which makes me think that he's, you know, sampled the sound of a fly or something has infected his gear, as you were saying, with, you know, flies representing corruption and decay. And he just has this smile on his face.
Yeah.
And it made me think back to Volume 1 from Dragon Premiani, where, you know, Niles was just this kind of good-natured, goofy scientist dude. And he just was always inventing stuff. And, oh, I love that page. That's just so... Yeah.
And he's in his wheelchair and he's got the blanket over his legs.
Yeah, it's just... I was like, oh, God, it's... Obviously, without meaning to speak on your behalf, Paul, but I think it's safe to say we're a little bit biased towards this book. But I think it's just so well done, honestly. It's got just, for people that have read Doom Patrol in the past, there's just so many nice touches in there. It's just, and Darrington's art, it's just so, it's great. It's just such nice, clean, fluid lines and the colouring from Tenma Bonvillain. It's just such. I want to read it again the minute we finish this.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting all mush mouth now.
Yeah, and I mean, there's weirdness in it, but it's not a barrier. Like,
no,
it all flows. It all makes sense. I mean, obviously, this is a world where if someone, you know, sings a song and someone explodes, no one bats an eyelid. But
which again is pretty much a classic Doom Patrol thing to have happen.
Yeah, but probably the most interesting pages are the last two.
I don't know what to make of them.
Mm.
Other than that what I'm calling the throne room, with the statues of the with domino masks on them and holding these golden weapons, that to me is sort of venturing into Morrison territory of examining mythical heroes and superheroics in general, but in that with that Morrison slant of the bizarre.
Yeah. And, like, the clouds, like, you see this tower and it's in the clouds and the clouds sort of encircle it. It's like, it's almost like it's inside a brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. And it looks sort of organic as well. And,
ooh.
Yeah. But the other thing that reminded me, the architecture of it and, you know, the character lying on the floor, it's not actually reminding me of anything in Watchmen in particular, but it's reminiscent of Watchmen. Like Ozymandias had, you know, he had that sort of genetically bred lynx cat.
Yes, yep.
He had very, Alexander the Great style architecture. Mm-hmm. And,
yep.
You know, so it just reminds me of that. And, you know, the statues are very, you know, they're classical. They're classical. Except they're wearing domino masks and they've got different coloured weapons. Like they've got all holding gold weapons. So there's like an orb. I don't know if that's a weapon. Could be a thermal detonator. and then some sort of scepter that looks a little bit like a mega rod from the New Gods.
Ooh, yes. Well, something in that room had to shoot those arrows into that line.
Yeah, so. Well, it looks like there is something next to the throne. It could be a broken, bow, possibly.
Mm.
Though, I'm actually looking at it, I think it's part of the window that's fallen in.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's lots of intriguing little plot threads, especially at the end there.
And the arrows are pure white, like they remind me of some of the imagery you saw in the Azzarello Wonder Woman run with the gods.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, I feel like we are looking at this very closely, falling down that rabbit hole.
But, I think we may be, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I really enjoyed it, and I really want to read the next issue. And I feel like you and I are both Doom Patrol fans, but my gut tells me this is a good comic.
Mm, yes.
Just one I'm excited about because of what I'm into, but actually a good comic. And,
yeah, I've seen a little bit of chatter online from other sources, and there are lots of people who are quite pleased by what they've seen and read so far.
Yeah, and I love the art. Like, Nick Darrington's art is just fantastic. There's no inker, and some of it looks like it's coloured directly over the pencils, and some of it looks like he's probably inked himself. I don't know. I'm not sure how he works. Does he do it on paper or does he do it all on a tablet? I'm not sure. There looks like lots of paper stuff in his Twitter.
Mm. Nick, if you're listening, you'll just have to come onto the show one time and describe your process for us.
Yeah. And Jared, if you're listening, you'll have to tell us who these people are. Who's M?
Yes, please. Amongst other things. But yeah, even the letters from Todd Klein, like... when we are introduced to Terry, the way she's singing and the tappity tap 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 things in the background.
Yeah.
It's just, yes, we probably sound biased. I don't care. It's a really well put together book. It's just, even the colored hues when Casey and Sam are out having their break and, you know, Casey's on the arcade game and Sam's having his snack. It's just, I am going to read it again the minute we finish this.
It's a beautiful comic.
Mm. Yeah.
And I love the next issue page where we see Casey finding a quarter and going, yes, in the couch. And then below that is Cliff sort of surrounded by, like he's in the orbit of all these little planets.
Mm.
It says, next issue, the quarter in the couch. Cliff goes cosmic.
Mm.
And we've seen the cover of next issue and it looks like it's about Negative Man or Larry Trainer or Rebus or, yeah.
I think it'll be Larry still.
Yeah.
Because the cover is showing someone. Well, he's got the parachute still attached to him. Mm-hmm. If I recall, if I speak and recall correctly. So, yeah. So, question for you, Paul. What do you think the reaction will be from people who have never read Doom Patrol will be?
I think they will be fairly confused, but. I think they'll be enjoying themselves. And, I mean, it's so nice to read a comic where you don't know what's going on and mm-hmm. you don't know, like, it's a puzzle and you haven't got all the pieces yet. And yeah. that's what I remember so many of the comics that I read in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, the proto-Vertigo stuff. You know, it was a puzzle and you thought about it. Like, I remember rereading Animal Man so many times, trying to put the pieces together in my head of where this was going and what mm-hmm. it was saying and, you know, the Coyote Gospel and things like that, just thinking about things. And this is that type of comic. I mean, it's, you know, you're getting a lot. Like, I think there's like 25 pages of Doom Patrol in this,
mm-hmm.
which is fantastic for a first issue.
Mm.
And, you know, it's meaty stuff. There's, you know, there's a lot to chew over. There's a lot to speculate about. Like, we've got these, you know, narrations and voiceovers and voices talking across panels and we're not sure who they are. And, you know, I love the speculating about that sort of stuff.
Mm,
yeah. So, I mean, I hope, I mean, I'm sure maybe 1 in 1,000 people are going, oh, this is weird, I don't like it. But they cannot deny the craft of it.
Yes.
You know, the characterization is just charming for, mm-hmm. for Casey and Terry. And Sam as well, and the art is top notch. I mean, Nick Darrington, he's been hiding, but you know, not anymore. I mean, he's you know, one of the best kept secrets in comics, and he's, you know, everyone will know about him after today.
And if people don't like it, we just have to remember that, you know, the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. You know, what might be right for you, Paul, might not be right for some.
Yeah.
You know, a man's born, he's a man of means. Then along come two Doom Patrol fans, they got nothing but their genes. But they got, you know, different strokes. It takes different strokes to move the world, Paul.
I hear what you're saying.
Because everybody's got a special kind of story and everybody finds a way to shine. And, you know, it doesn't matter that you got not a lot. You know, so what? They'll have theirs, you'll have yours, and I'll have mine, and together we'll be fine. Because you know why, Paul?
Why?
Because it takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does.
Gotcha. I've got a 2-stroke mower. I had a 4-stroke. They're different strokes. Anyway.
What you talking about, Flanger?
Yeah. So, well done. Well done, Nick. Well done, Gerard. We are very impressed. We're very happy Doom Patrol fans today.
Let's shout out the whole team. Gerard Way, writing. Nick Darrington on art, Todd Klein on letters, Tamara Bonvillain on colours, James Harvey did the colours on the standard cover, and we've got the variant covers by Babstar, Jaime Hernandez, Brian Bolland, Sanford Green, and Brian Chippendale. I tip my hat to the entire crew. As a Doom Patrol fan, I am very happy with this. I'm delighted with this first issue, and I think the book is in excellent hands.
Mm. Yes, well done.
I'm so happy. Oh, God. I need to lie down. Do you think we've doomsplained enough, Paul?
We could doomsplain some more, but I think, you know, the law of diminishing doomsplaining.
I think for the first issue, we've done pretty well.
Yeah.
Roll on issue 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Waiting for doom again. And that's it's time for the Mailbag of Doom. And one of the things we've noticed is we have been remiss because we had a few comments come and go, and we've missed them. So there's quite a bit happening on the Facebook page. So just delving back a bit, we've had comments from Alex Bowman has showed up on a lot of our posts, and he's commented. So I think he's found us recently, and Michael Wagner, and we had responses from Ruth Sutherland, from Darren and Ruth Sutherland fame. Yeah, and Jared Driscoll's been responding to a lot of our posts here. And even today we've had a new one from TJ Milky Mixer. And he says he really likes the Babstar cover, but worries that it'll cost an arm and a leg. I believe they're all cover price because comic shops could order as many as they want of any of them. So
excellent.
They're not variants with a ratio that you have to order. We shared the Rachel Pollack interview by Joe Carollo. Carollo? Anyway, and TJ Milky Mixer said, "This is amazing. Thanks for sharing this. I always felt Rachel Pollack's time with the Doom Patrol was underappreciated. It's great she is finally getting recognized. Hopefully her stories will get collected one day alongside Grant Morrison's." And we heartily echo that. That would be fantastic to see Rachel's stuff in print. It is on Comixology, but everyone loves a book. You can lend people a book. You can't lend people a Comixology account.
Because then it's like, hey, give me back my iPad or whatever.
Things like that. You can't get them autographed either.
No. Well, you could, but it's,
Anyway, Mike, take us to the Mailbag of Doom central topic for the week.
Yes, well, last time we asked our listeners, what is the one thing you didn't know about comic books at first? And our first response was from Aaron Long, who said, "I didn't know Robot Man was one of the X-Men."
Right. We heard from Professor Allen at Relatively Geeky, Relatively_Geek, and he said the different writers and artists had their own individual styles.
We heard from Luther at Luther Lang, who I think is a new respondent. So welcome, Luther. And they said that characters other than superheroes had their start in comics.
Men in Black, The Mask.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We heard from Nicholas at Nick RDE, and he said there was more than just Star Wars ones.
Yes, yes. Lots of variety in comics, funnily enough. Yes. Martin Gray at Mark Gray wrote in and said, "Why on earth the children of America should be selling grit door to door?"
That must be a reference to an old comic ad.
I think grit was like the brand name of a company that got kids to sell stuff like greeting cards or newspaper or magazine subscriptions or something. And then the kids would earn points or could use the money they'd raise to send in to the company to get things like walkie-talkies or bicycles or inflatable rowboats and stuff that. I think that's what Grit's referring to. I don't think he means like handfuls of dirt and sludge being sold door to door.
Good, good. Well,
yes.
Weird. We heard from Astrakis One, a KMW on Twitter this time. He's gotten rid of the anagrams.
That's a very short one for Kevin, yeah.
Yeah. He said that you could get new ones. The guy selling comics at the flea market I went to as a kid only had old issues for cheap, and I just figured their stock of comics was replenished through something like magic. And finding a real comic store was an epiphany.
Yeah, we've all had that feeling. First time you walk in a real comic store. Yeah. Moby One, at Shmoby One, said he learned that sea monkeys were a thing. Yep. That's where I first learned about them.
I think I had sea monkeys at least once.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They're not very exciting.
They're not?
No.
So it's false advertising?
They're like tiny krill. They don't look anything like monkeys, and they never had crowns and things like that.
Oh, so you didn't have like a happy-looking family of sea monkeys?
No, they're just little weird things that soon died due to poor neglect. Poor sea monkeys. We heard from Jonathan Dick, who's at Real Last Name, which is a great Twitter handle. And he said how the art and words work together. Bit of Scott McLeod, Understanding Comics there. And I don't think we've had any comments from Jonathan Dick before. But
no,
he seems...
I think Jonathan's a new respondent as well.
He seems to have discovered us this week, which is good timing.
Yes, yes. Welcome, Jonathan. And welcome all new listeners. And over on Facebook, we heard from Alex Bowman, another new recent person who's been following us. And he responded to this with, "This question baffles me, but I do think the question would make an interesting guest star for a Doom Patrol book. I say we have a team-up book, a la Brave and the Bold or DC Comics Presents, Doom Patrol and a new guest star each issue. The possibilities are endless. Doom Patrol and the Endless."
From Sandman. Oh, nice one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty wild combo right there.
Yeah, and we also had a comic from Doug Savisha on his own blog.
Ooh.
Yes, and he said, "Personally, I had no idea there were so many people responsible for actually working on the comics. Writers, pencillers, inkers, colorists. I thought for sure if I was doing it all myself on paper with crayons, and the same held true all over, right?"
not quite. We also got a couple of emails this week. The first from Ange, Dr. Ange. And he said, "Hey guys, great episode about the Fantastic Four tribute issue. While I knew a story existed called This Man, This Monster, I had never read it. So hearing this whole thing was an homage, was a knowledge bomb. So you asked, what is the one thing I didn't know about comics at first? And what I didn't know, and maybe should never have learned, is that need to be kept in perfect condition in bags and boards, slavishly alphabetized. As a young Ange, I used to throw my comics in a big cardboard box near my dad's workroom. When I wanted to read a back issue, I'd stick my hand down to the bottom of the box and pull out something random. You see, the bottom books were the ones I hadn't read in a long time because books recently read were thrown on top of the pile. The books were dog-eared, crinkled, and beloved. Then one day, someone brought me Amazing Spider-Man number 234. In that was the Marvel Guide to Collecting Comics. It said that they should be bagged, kept vertical, treated with a museum curator's level of care. And then a tween Ange took that to heart. And so began the crippling, neurotic upkeep of my comic collection. Curse you, Marvel!" Yeah, I think there's a few of us that can agree with that, Ange. Thank you for that. And we got another email from a David Bretta, who I think has also just recently discovered the show. Hello, David. And he wrote, "Hey guys, love the show. It makes my 1-hour commute less dull. I've been a fan of the Doom Patrol since the Teen Titans." And he responded to a question from a couple of episodes ago about who your favorite fin-bearing person was. And David said his favorite fin guy is Tiger Shark. At least that was the first one that came to mind that hit me this morning. Keep up the good work, Dave. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for getting in touch.
Awesome.
All right, Paul. What was something you didn't know about comics at first?
There were many things I didn't know about comics at first. I think my first trip to the comic store, it was like, oh, comics arrive on a particular day, which I didn't know. I just thought it was just random. I didn't know it was one day of the week and there were new comics every week like that. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest thing I had to grapple with was the concept of someone could do the cover who didn't draw the comic. I think it freaked me out when I remember there was a Batman comic and it had a fantastic Brian Bolland cover, and then I looked inside it and the art inside was nothing like that. And I was like, what's going on? This isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I've since learned that, the cover can be done by different artists to attract the unwary buyer.
Mm. Yes.
What about you, Mike?
For me, it would have been as a kid first getting into comics, I guess the notion of sort of intellectual property, but then each company having their own separate universes and then characters interacting within that universe. Like it was kind of like, as a kid, it's like comics are comics, you know, there's Spider-Man and hey, wait a minute. How come Spider-Man can appear with Thor on the Hulk, but he can't appear with Batman?
You know? Oh, yeah.
Hey, what, how come? Oh, wow. There's a comic here that's got Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. Oh, my tiny brain. So I guess sort of, getting to grips with it, you know, there were different comic companies and they had their own universes and you know, sort of grappling with the fact that, okay, right, so I'll never see Spider-Man and Batman team up really. But hey, it's cool that, you know, Batman and Superman get to hang out. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. So that was something I remember first grappling with that as a kid and going, oh, okay, right.
Yeah, my son comes home from school and says, oh, people were saying that Batman's a Marvel character today. I love you, mate.
Oh, I trust he set them right.
He does.
Cool. All righty. Well, that's the mailbag done.
Awesome. So that's it for the show. Next week, Mike, what will we be talking about?
Next week, we are going back to the 60s. We are looking at issues 117 and 118 from Volume 1. And we will be having a guest joining us to discuss those issues.
Awesome.
Yes. Excellent. Yes.
And the next question of the week, I think we're going to ask everyone, what did you think of the new number one? Seems like they're a good time to do it, other than 2 weeks ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it wouldn't have made a lot of sense.
Yeah. And
even more wild speculation.
Yeah, but we would invite you all to respond. So you can respond on Twitter by going to the Twitter account, Wilfred at WFDpod. You can send us an email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can send us comments via Facebook. We'll have a post about this. You can go to Doug's blog, which is mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. So if you have a response to what you thought of the new number one, let us know. And, we'd love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. We'd love to know if you liked it. If you didn't like it, we'd be interested to hear why. If you just want to wait and see, you can have your own opinion.
That's right.
Yeah.
Don't forget, different strokes.
Could be wrong, but you can have it.
Yep. You're more than we're going to be wrong.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for joining us in this auspicious occasion, everybody.
And I still can't believe this day has come, Paul.
It's crazy.
I'd like to think in my heart of hearts that, you know, we may have had something to do with it.
Well, we possibly did.
Possibly, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, everyone. It's been an amazing, incredible journey, and we want to keep doing the journey.
Oh, the journey will continue for sure. I want to do a very quick special thanks and shout out to the people that helped make this show happen and have gotten us to this point and will continue to do so. First of all, Paul, I love you, man. I'm so glad I'm doing this journey with you. It's a lot of fun, and I'm amazed that we are here on this day with the new Doom Patrol, but that we get to continue looking back at the Patrol's history as well. Big shout out to Doug Zavisha for his accompanying posts and his amazing mygreatestadventure80.blogspot site. That's always a lot of fun and a lot of good reading there. Also, shout out to Rifty, the silent partner of the show, who literally helps us get to air each episode. Without him, it'd be half a show, basically.
Yeah.
That's what we have. And I also want to give a shout out to the fans that have encouraged us and joined us on this bizarre, hysterical, emotional love fest for the Doom Patrol. So, yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll thank you, Mike. And also shout out to Mrs. Rifty because she puts up with us too.
Yeah, and she's really good at judo or something, so we've got to stand
on her side. She is. And also thank my family for putting up with me doing a podcast every week.
Mm-hmm. I'll also do a special shout out to my girlfriend Kylie for putting up with my constant ramblings and ravings about the Doom Patrol and recording it all odd hours. I love you, darling. Thank you very much for your patience and understanding.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Keep waiting for Doom.
Bye.